I'm Hillary.
And I'm Sandra. So what is the difference between a sex coach and a sex therapist?
Well, we have a sex coach on the show. Her name is Tracy Wilson, and she's going to get down and dirty about the differences.
She also answers a really important question. Is it possible for a couple to be completely sexually incompatible?
Ooh, that's a good question. These are intimate questions. She gets right into it. She's also going to talk about why us ladies, well, and men, should never, ever fake it.
The Quick and the Dirty Podcast with Hillary Welch and Sandra Plagakis.
Okay, so Sandra and I were talking before we sat down to record this podcast, and we both have major questions about guys sliding into your DMs saying things they shouldn't.
Things like, hey, baby, what are you wearing today, baby? Hi, sexy, wanna talk? These are the kinds of things I suspect most women on social media deal with on the regular, yes?
I've gotten a few of them. Who have you received them from? Like, have they been listeners? Have they been fans?
I get DMs from complete strangers. What happens is, because my Facebook profile is now gone public, I'm getting a constant barrage of friend requests.
Okay.
So I started just accepting people. So now what's happening is that as soon as I accept you, within 2 seconds, the creeps come out and play. And it's unbelievable. And here's a clue. Like, when a guy has a shirtless selfie and he's ripped, he's probably looking for some action.
You do realize that most of those are bots, right?
What? No, I don't know anything about this. So, it's so creepy.
Okay, so if you then click on their profile and they have, like, not a lot of friends, or their friends also look kind of sketchy, it's probably a computer and it's trying to mine information from you to get, like, your credit card information and scam you.
Through Facebook?
Yep. Facebook, Instagram, all those things.
Oh my God, I'm so naive. I don't know the ways of the world, Hillary. This is like the first time I even thought for a second it couldn't be a creepy man. So there's creepy bots, is what
you're saying.
Right.
Little robots that are trying to get your stuff.
That are just trying to take my stuff.
But then there are the actual creeps that are also trying to get at your stuff.
Well, I think I'm getting a little bit of both of them. And so now I'm realizing that as soon as I accept you as a friend and, like, within 30 seconds you send me a note, that's probably a bot.
Right. It's like an automatic thing. Yeah.
Okay, that's good. So what I normally do at that point is I unfriend you and block you.
Okay.
Okay, is that smart?
I mean, it doesn't really matter, but yeah.
Once they're in, they're in.
Well, no. It just doesn't matter as long as you don't give them anything.
Okay, fair enough. Like, is it like a nudie? Like,
no, them, like, Hillary? Any of your information.
Okay, all right. This is how naive I am. I'm new to all of this. I know the difference between a listener and a creep. So, but now I need to understand the difference between a bot. Can you tell the difference?
For the most part, if I don't know you or we've never met, I don't engage in any conversation.
Fair. Absolutely.
Like, unless you say, you give me an introduction like, hey, Hillary, I've been listening to the show. Love that. I will 100% get back to you if you give me something to go on. But if it's like a hey, baby, or how's it going? I kind of feel like it's like online dating. Give me more or you're not getting my time.
That's exactly right. And I'm just wondering, assuming now for a second that those guys that will say, hey, baby, and they're not a bot, does that work? Like, seriously, if you send a strange woman a hey baby, like, do you think you're gonna reel it in, buddy?
I don't understand, but I know that some people meet on Instagram and on Facebook. I have friends who met their partners on those things, but it kind of creeps me out because it's like someone's stalking you and thinks they know you, and then they get to know you.
And then they get to know you. I am so not cool with this whole DM thing with strangers. And you're right. Like, sometimes because of what we do for a living, we get listeners to our show or our podcast who reach out. And, you know, I have no problem engaging at that point. But then once in a while, there's a dude, and they know I'm married. If they listen to the show, they know I'm a married woman, or the podcast, and they still are trying.
Right, but they also know you a hoe.
Maybe she's good to go. Maybe she isn't. I was like, dude, have you not listened to the podcast? I'm a 3 in bed. Why would you even want to come after me? And I'm hairy. And I'm bitchy. What do you want from me?
It's because you're honest and open, and you're Sandra. You're oh so Sandra.
Oh my God, please. Try being married to me or dating me for 5 minutes. You'd want to kill yourself. I promise you that.
How long have I been your friend?
Like, I just look at these people like, I don't, if I was a guy, I wouldn't want to date me. I'd look at me and I'd be like, oh my God, she's a piece of work. Forget it.
But you are interesting. Have you had anyone go further and be inappropriate? I have this regular listener that sends me personal messages on Facebook, and I try to be polite because they are a listener and, you know, ratings matter and whatever. But he starts getting deeper and deeper into the conversation, and it goes places where I can feel it's going to get inappropriate, and then I shut it down and I say, hey, I'm happy that you listen to the show. Great to have a good fan, but you understand that I'm in a relationship and I'm not interested more. And then he'll say, oh, yeah, yeah, okay, no problem. And he'll leave me alone for like a month. And then again, hey, Hillary.
Oh, that's so what is wrong with people?
Just in case we broke up, I don't know.
Of course.
Wear me down slowly.
Does he, that person, do you think, actually listen to the show, or has it just been a thing of like they know of you?
No, they actually listen to the show. But that's even creepier because they'll like send me messages about the show, but more like searching for more information on me.
At what point do you say, dude, I don't want to talk to you anymore? Because of what we do for a living, we want to be kind to people, and we understand that we're part of your day and your life and your, you know, your mornings. And some people think that they feel like we're friends, which really is the ultimate compliment.
Right. If it is someone really hot that is messaging you, do you ever think like, okay, I'll let this one slide because it's great for my ego?
I'd say this. I'm going to now dance around this one, Hillary. I would say this. If I was single, I would be getting laid constantly from all the possibilities. Like, it's like, seriously. And there was one guy like 2 years ago who was just, everything I posted on social media, he was just like down with Sandra. But eventually I just had to block him. And it's like, now my kids are seeing your post. Like, it's, that's enough. What is happening here? You know?
Right.
But a single Sandra would be like, yeah, I'm hot. Yeah, you know it. I have that instant fan, always putting like the fire emoji on everything you do.
Wasn't it great that? If our partners were constantly putting the fire emoji on everything we did?
Oh, my God. She's hot. I know guys who do that with their wives. There's one a Facebook friend of mine. He's actually a client of the radio station, and he's like the sweetest. He puts like a birthday shout outs to a smoking hot wife, and she's smoking hot. And I'm like, yeah, she is. And that's awesome.
Yeah, we're going to talk about so much stuff on today's podcast about marriage and relationships, and how you can give and get what you need from your partner. This is going to be a good one.
We are very excited to welcome today's guest on the Quick and the Dirty podcast. You know that we love talking about sex. You know that we love talking about relationships. So it only makes sense that we invite a sex coach on today. Please welcome to the Quick and the Dirty podcast, sex coach Tracy Wilson.
Yay!
Hello, nice to meet
Hello.
You.
Hello, hi, nice to meet you, Mike, nice to meet you.
Tracy, it's so nice to meet you from afar.
Absolutely, hello.
Hello, I can't wait to talk about what it is you do and how you can help us be sexier.
You, specifically me, thanks. Now, when I talk about sexual problems today, please know that I am talking about myself, but I'm going to pretend that I'm not, okay? Are we good with that? Everybody's cool with that? Hillary, you got that okay?
And also, please know that when I ask questions, I'm going to pretend that I'm innocent, but I'm not so innocent, like Britney Spears says.
That's right. Can we just start off, first of all, by being very clear about what it is that you do? What is the difference between a sex coach and a sex therapist?
Well, a lot of people, when they first hear sex coach, they wonder, are you in the bedroom when people are doing it? Nope, no whistle, no timeout. So coaching is a specific type of modality. So what I do is I work with healthy individuals. I work to facilitate their moving themselves forward to reach their goals. And
you mean orgasms, don't you?
Not with me.
No, but I mean, let's all face it. Our goal is an orgasm.
Sometimes, or a few, or sometimes the concern might be that you're too oriented towards achieving something like that. But
maybe foreplay is a problem, Hillary. Has it ever occurred to you that maybe some people can't do foreplay very well?
Well, how do you get the orgasm without the foreplay?
That's a good point, actually.
So I like to emphasize with people that the difference between a coach and a therapist is I'm not a psychotherapist, not a psychologist, not a medical professional, not a certified counselor. So I'm a coach. I did a certification out of Los Angeles, California, of course. And
because they know how to have sex out there, good.
There's no shockers.
Right.
And so, again, I use the coaching modality to hold that safe space for people so they can address their sexual concerns and then move themselves forward towards their goals.
Tracy, what makes people want to be a sex coach? Like, why did you decide to get into this?
I spent quite a few years on the side. My side hustle was selling the lotions, potions, whippy snappies, and buzzy friends at home parties. And I found that the longer I was doing that and the older I got, the more when I was in the sales room with people, I realized that a product was not the solution to their concerns. And people were feeling very lost. And that's what I really wanted to address. So I thought, hey, how do I do this? And then I discovered the coaching program that I ended up taking for a year through distance learning. And then I ended up going to Los Angeles to see all the things.
You saw all the things, didn't you?
and that was it, right? Was knowing that a lot of people were lost and stuff didn't solve the problems all the time.
When Hillary asked you why you wanted to be a sex coach, I immediately thought that your answer would be because I wanted to be really good in bed.
No.
I mean, did you learn a couple of things along the way too? Not to get too personal, but I'm asking.
I learned lots of things. When you see all the things, what's really cool is if you pay attention to when you see all the things and you can let any sort of shame or preconceived notions go and you can open yourself up to the potentialities. You betcha. I've learned some. I got some tips and tricks.
Oh,
now I have another question. Do you ever listen to other people's problems and you think to yourself, like, "Oh my God, thank God that's not my problem"?
Sometimes, I mean, there's a bit more of an empathy, but absolutely, I think when you hear anybody's concerns and when people have the tears flow, you know, and you're holding that space for somebody, yes, of course, you see yourself as really fortunate. I've been married for 29 years, so I can also, you know, been there, done that, got the T-shirt on many of those things. But yeah, absolutely, you know, I'm glad that's not my concern, but again, I'm here to hold space so that people can express that and share.
You talked about the tears and people, you know, I suspect that being a sex coach is more than just teaching people moves. You know what I mean? What I'm getting at is this. How do you teach couples to find passion with each other when they've been married for over 20 years? Again, asking for a friend. No, but seriously, because, I mean, you lose the butterflies.
And then
things happen. And then you just, you know, once you've had sex with someone thousands and thousands of times, mm-hmm. where do you get the incentive to keep wanting to have sex with that person? Again, for a friend, I'm asking.
Answering also as a friend who hasn't been married for 29
right,
years.
Right.
You know, the butterflies go, right? You've got that that early relationship and, you know, moon, stars, rainbows, and you're schmoopy, I'm schmoopy, and it goes away, and it all becomes work, right? The relationship becomes work, learning proper communication skills about all of the things. But then also we can get trapped up inside, am I enough for that other person? And when we get wrapped up in am I enough, or maybe we have some body image concerns and self-esteem concerns, where we're looking for that validation from our partner, we can actually completely lose what turns us on, what floats our boat, what are we into? Or we might feel shame about that. But what's really cool is that you can be with somebody for, hypothetically speaking, I don't know, 29 years. And if you're open to it and you can have those communications and let go of the shame and explore what's out there and have the conversation, it can actually get better than it used to be, right? You've got that comfort level. And if you have that openness to explore new things and talk about it, you can discover constantly new things that you did not know floated your boat or the little man in the boat or whatever.
Tracy, how do you keep those conversations about what your sex life is going to be from being negotiations versus like having fun? Because we all know as you become more comfortable in your relationship, you talk about everything and everything's kind of a negotiation. You'll handle this. I'll be responsible for this. We divide the duties, the chores at home. But when it comes to having a sexual relationship with somebody, there needs to be some fun involved.
Absolutely, there has to be fun involved. And of course, if your partner comes up to you and says, hey, let's talk about mixing it up, and they're being open and they're being vulnerable, the first thing that we tend to do is say, well, why? I'm not enough for you? Why? What's wrong with me? What's wrong? So again, using proper communication skills to start and open that conversation and talk about, you know, having fun and recognizing that when your partner gets their back up, maybe they're feeling a bit insecure. And if you have somebody that's withdrawing, you know, having compassion for that person. So again, it is just being open to the conversation, open, being vulnerable, working on yourself and your self-esteem. As opposed to, all right, so, you know, we're going to do it Wednesday. Wednesday's hump day. So Wednesday at 9 p.m., that's when we will engage in coitus.
You make it sound so sexy.
It's hot, baby. It's hot.
I'm not saying I'm married to an engineer, but I might be. Yeah.
So what you're saying is appointment sex is no bueno?
No, I think that appointment sex is great. However, understanding that, you know, consent today for, you know, potential consent on Wednesday, everybody understands that if you're not into it, then it could be a no-go. However, there's a really cool thing that a lot of people aren't aware of in regards to libido. And so if our partner puts, you know, their hand on our thigh and they say, hey, baby, what do you think? Or it's Wednesday and it's 9 p.m. We can say, I'm not into it. I'm just not into it. I'm not ready. But are you willing to consider becoming ready? In other words, instead of just waiting for that moment when everything's a go, sometimes we have to be willing to become aroused.
Right.
We have to be open to, you know what?
Seduction.
That's right. Seduction or, you know, yeah, if you know it's Wednesday morning and if you got to watch Outlander episodes all day or whatever you need to do.
It's like you're looking into my soul right now. Yeah. I don't get this.
But everybody's partner is different, right? Like, I don't know what sweet hell our creator decided to make this a thing. But guys, they like morning. And I'm like, don't touch me till I've showered, brushed my teeth, and I feel pretty.
There's a reason why a lot of guys like the morning, and that's because their testosterone levels are highest. And so they wake up, especially if they have erection concerns. Notice I didn't say dysfunction because I don't diagnose and I don't like those sorts of labels. So if they have erection concerns, a lot of guys are waking up. They've got the, you know, morning situation going on and they're like, you know, looks like I'm good to go. Let's use this.
Don't waste it while we've got it.
That's right.
Exactly. It's like it's a renewable resource. It's okay. Let's everybody chill. But a lot of times that's why.
Okay, I got to ask this question, and you've talked to hundreds and hundreds of couples and people about this. Are a lot of people having bad sex?
I think a lot of people are not experiencing sex the optimal way that they could. I think that a lot of us, I mean, the number one question that I get as a sex coach is that normal? Am I normal? Am I average? Am I meeting the standard? You know, how often are people doing this? How many people are doing that? And we really have to let that go. I always say that as long as what you're doing involves consenting human adults, all is cool. And, you know, people compare. We compare our bodies. We compare ourselves, our success, you know, the Joneses. So these impressions that we have of the types of sex that people are having, we can get so fixated on what we think we're supposed to be doing that we're not at all open to what we want and what turns us on. And then just letting go of being vulnerable and experiencing maximum pleasure overdrive.
So, Tracy, one of the things we wanted to ask you about is a conversation that Sandra and I have had a few times. Mm. We
go
always
ahead,
wonder, how do you know you're good in bed?
How do you know that you're good in bed? Well, it depends, right? So who are you talking about? Who is the partner or partners that you're referring to? Because we all have different things. I mean, you might, you know, put on the Catwoman outfit and you've got the whippy snappies and, you know, you're having a fun dom time. But you're with a vanilla partner that, you know, wants to sprinkle down the rose petals and just have a nice massage. So that's not going to be.
I'm sorry, that's vanilla? Because that's fancy to me. Rose petals and massaging? That's vanilla?
That wasn't your weekend? Anyway, that's fine.
That's fine. I'm not judging. I get it. Okay. I'm sorry.
No Joneses, remember?
No Joneses. Okay. You're right. You're right about that.
So it depends. It depends on, you know, that's why you want to have the conversation. What type of sex do you want to have? What sorts of things bring you pleasure? And having those conversations with your partner or partners. And, you know, what do we all want to do today? Whatever your situation is. And that's how you have good sex. So, you know, good sex in bed with person A may not be good sex in bed with person B.
All right. So what if you ask your partner, you ask your partner straight up, hey, I got a question for you. Am I good in bed? And they look terrified when asked the question, like terrified. So I asked because I knew you were coming in today. So last night I asked my husband that question and he was like, he thought it was a trap.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's going to be like, you know, it's like walking in and saying, does this dress make me look fat?
Oh.
Right? Like freeze in the headlights, don't make any sudden moves. Yeah, it's the same sort of thing because, you know, does your partner know that it isn't a, does this dress make me look fat? That it's actually, you know, hey, I want to make sure that all of your needs are being met. And there's actually different tools that I use. I have a yes, no, maybe checklist that I use with some of my clients where I have a whole range of sexual activities listed. And each partner has a copy of the sheet and they can indicate yes, no, maybe. They can rate it 1 to 5. They can write comments. And you fill these out talking about all sorts of things that you're interested in, may not be interested in, what's a hard no, and then you exchange these. And it's like a nonverbal way to start the conversation about what you might be interested in, and then you can kind of open it up from there. But yeah, for sure. I don't know if I'd answer that question either. If, you know, am I good in bed? I love you.
I mean, I asked him specifically to give me a ranking out of 10.
You're cruel, Sandra.
That's horrible. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't rank him. I asked him to rank me.
Oh, yeah. That again, deer in the headlights. I love you. You look pretty today. I like your hair. Like, that would be the type of response.
He was terrified. He said, I'll give you a 10 out of 10. I said, come on. Where can I improve? Mm-hmm. And he said, my seduction skills were on point. My foreplay skills were excellent. My dismount was good.
Now you're just showing off.
But then he said, maybe I could work on my flexibility.
Nice.
So I said, okay, I accept that. I will. I'll stretch beforehand from now on. But Hillary, would you ever dare ask your partner that question? Or do you already know the answer?
I think it's more about how you feel. Because I honestly feel like when we're being intimate, the more I stop caring about whether he's having fun and just have fun, the more fun he has. Hmm? Like, yep. It's strange. Because I've always been kind of an insecure person where I constantly worry about what my lovers have thought and how what they want. And if that's the case, you're sending yourself down a rabbit hole of bad sex for life.
Yep.
Because you're always self-conscious and you tense up, I bet.
Well, and you're not letting them know what you need to have fun. And that becomes the way you do it for the rest of time.
And then afterwards, you overanalyze it and then feel bad about the sex that you're having. And then you just equate sex with bad.
Yeah, there's nothing more awesome that you can do for your partner than say, oh, wow, you were amazing. That was just when you did this, when you did that, that was great. And, you know, that's why if you have a situation where women end up having a G-spot orgasm with a visible female ejaculation. Once that happens, you know, and you're with a male partner, they think they are king of the world. They have just had a visual confirmation, because that's another thing, right? Guys are like, I don't know. I like, was that good for you? Because I've got no evidence. There is no evidence that there was anything experienced and enjoyed right there. So when they can see something that's similar to how they experience that, then they're like, all right, I have confirmation. I must be awesome.
So, and once you've had a woman fake it with you, I bet that you're always a little suspicious after that.
And hopefully you care. Yeah.
But that's the thing. I think a lot of women at some point or another do fake it. And then you've set yourself up, like they think they're doing a good job. And then you have to have that awkward conversation later about how you're not satisfied.
And I think for me, when I hear from individuals saying, you know, well, yeah, I faked it. You know, let's talk about that. Let's talk about you. Because again, that's, you know, you're focusing on a lot of times with orgasms for women. You know, we talk about it's not so much achieving the orgasm as it is allowing the orgasm, right? So the more that you try and achieve something and the worse you're thinking about, you know, oh, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Hey, guess what? Not going to happen. You know, if you're focused on expressing that you've experienced that for the pleasure of someone else, you know, that's kind of sad. And you can experience, you know, more pleasure for yourself. You know, what about you? What about your needs? You know, experiencing it yourself versus expressing it for the pleasure of someone else.
Is that a problem, though, where women will cop to faking it just to end it because they're not having a good time?
Well, and also if you, from a self-esteem perspective, you're wanting to be a 10, if you want the 10 experience for your partner,
right, then,
you know, moaning and screaming and thrashing and so on so that, you know, you're being enough for somebody else. That can very often be a goal. You know, he likes this lingerie, so I'm wearing this lingerie. He likes this. He likes this move. That's great. That's cool. And that's awesome that you want to be something for someone else and provide them with a pleasurable experience. But don't lose sight of your own pleasure and your own, you know, super awesome.
Well, Hillary, you faked it, obviously. I faked it. I faked it so much.
Not because sometimes, you know, it's just
bad.
Not going to happen.
I'm faking it now.
You know it's not going to happen, and you just, like, maybe your favorite show is starting at 9 and you just want to move it along.
Okay. No, but, like, there is, like, sometimes I'm more interested in the connection than the orgasm.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same. I mean, you want that foreplay, you want that intimacy, and sometimes, you don't need the big finish.
Well, and that's not just true for women, right? So sometimes you can have situations where guys are having delayed ejaculation or they're having difficulty finishing, quote unquote. And
whiskey.
Yeah, and yes, you betcha. And anyway, 29 years. Like,
but
I
you
said.
Know, when that happens, though, I know what you're talking about. When that happens, I feel really bad.
Yes.
I feel like I have failed.
Yep.
And I have been shitty in bed.
Yes.
Which, I mean, I've already given myself a 3 out of 10 ranking, so I know I don't have much to work with at the beginning.
Yep.
But if I can't, if the husband doesn't finish, again, 25 years.
Yep.
I feel like I'm doing a poor job. And what else can I do to make it work?
So that's where, again, so you can, that's exactly what happens. You know, why wasn't I enough? Didn't I turn you on? Same with if it's delayed ejaculation or loss of erection and so on. And you have to really be compassionate, but not too overtly, let's talk about this, because then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Oh, yeah.
Because for sure, he is also going, you know, okay, you know, I would prefer this. So again, that's kind of where you can switch over into the compassion. And also, it's okay if there isn't an orgasm and ejaculation. You know, everybody had a good time. You know, is there more that you want to do here? But then when you get really focused, and you can't see I'm talking with my hands here, but when you get really focused on how can we make this happen for you, and then, you know, he gets trapped inside of his head. So, yeah, a lot of times we do want to switch to the pleasure of the experience and maybe not necessarily being so goal-oriented in regards to orgasm every time.
Mismatched libidos.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
You bet.
That means when one person's good to go and the other one needs a lot of work. How do you match it up?
So
besides alcohol, for the obvious. Right.
Which can end up in that last thing we talked about.
But, right.
You know, what are the chances that two people are going to want to do the same stuff in the same way at the same time? Very low. But unfortunately, what can happen is this is how, with mismatched libido, depending on how you address this and tackle this, you can end up in what we call the sexless marriage. And so it becomes the chase. So you have one individual that has a lower libido than the other partner. And the one with the higher libido is, you know, hey, how about now? And they get rejected. So they've been vulnerable. They've asked for sex. They've been rejected. And again, if there's a self-esteem concern, you know, I wasn't enough for you, then they can start asking more often. And then that person that's not interested starts not at all looking forward to eye contact, physical touch, because they think that they're constantly being approached for sex. And that's actually what can start happening. And the person that has the higher libido might not even be all that interested in sex. Now they're just seeking validation that they're enough and worthy and so on. And yeah, that chase can get pretty relentless where there's not even any physical contact whatsoever. So you want to tackle that head on for sure.
I've even been in a situation where one partner had a higher libido, kind of the same sort of thing. And then the higher partner libido didn't want to do it when the other one wanted to, because, well, you didn't want to do it when I wanted to do it, and became this competition.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Another thing that can happen is that, you know, we believe the myths. So there's the competition thing again, or the comparison, I mean. And that would be that guys want it all the time. So guys want it all the time. And so what can happen with some women in relationships is that their guy doesn't, pardon me, want it all the time. And so, well, what's wrong with me? Because guys are supposed to want it all the time. All my friends, you know, they don't want to have sex, and I want to have sex, but my guy doesn't want it all the time. And yeah, that can be a real hit to the self-esteem until you get into online groups that are filled with women that, you know, all want it more than their partners. And yeah, so it's really, really tough. And that's where communication and good relationship communication skills are key. Because relationships can completely fall apart if you're not communicating properly about these things, and you start getting, you know, angry that you're not having sex. It's just not a good time.
What I don't understand is that you were saying that what if one party wants sex and then the other one starts to get sort of stressed because they're constantly being asked for sex? Mm-hmm. I would love to be constantly, have someone constantly ask me for sex. Like, I would feel really good about myself if my partner constantly wanted sex from me. I wouldn't recoil in horror.
Yes, but that's just you. So for example, if you're a lower libido person that maybe you've gone through some sort of change, you've gone through a health change. If you're a new mom and you've given birth, something's happened hormonally, you're on a new medication, you know, whatever may have happened that all of a sudden, you know, you're feeling like less, pardon me, you're not feeling well. And you've got this person that's constantly hounding you. It's really tough because you're trying to deal with, you know, how you feel. And yeah,
and you feel like you've let them down.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's it. Then there's the guilt. I'm not enough for you. And so when we do have those, of course, if there's any sudden changes in libido or anything in regards to sex, erections, definitely you want to definitely talk to your doctor. But after you've addressed, you know, all of these sorts of things, you know, maybe talk to a sex coach. I don't know.
Why are guys so hesitant to go to the doctor?
Because there is so much wrapped up in the erection. And so a lot of times when a guy is not experiencing erections the way that they were, they're not thinking about their cardiovascular system. They're not thinking about blood flow. That's right. They're thinking about, well, you know, it's probably because I'm tired. It's probably because of this. And I mean, how often do we do that with all sorts of health sorts of things? But yeah, if you're experiencing erection changes, number one, first thing you have to do is go in and see the doctor. But if guys are feeling like, you know, they feel that their masculinity is you know, fading away and so on, that will take them away from thinking about their cardiovascular system. And when they do go to the doctor, they have to, you know, they want to say specifically, I have been experiencing this, not just a random question like, so hypothetically speaking, if a guy was, right? Like, this is
like
what
we do here. Yeah, that's what I get.
This is what my body is experiencing. Always tell your doctor.
Okay. As a sex coach, the first thing I thought of was, oh, Tracy goes in the bedroom with couples,
hell no,
watches from the sidelines, makes notes, and then afterwards, I mean, is that a thing, though?
For some individuals, I mean, you know, there's all sorts of people doing all sorts of things. So I always tell people that I'm a no hands on, no hands in, talk only sex coach. And I'll always get people, well, of course you are. Well, no, not of course I am. There are different people that do different types of body work. There's people that work as sex surrogates. There's all sorts
what
of
now?
Things.
Say, what
is
now?
A sex surrogate?
Hello. Let's talk about that.
A surrogate, that's something where, you know, in different parts of the world, different countries, possibly in Canada, I don't know anyone.
I'm writing that down for a podcast idea, Hillary. All right. So what
Find
do they do?
Find me a sex surrogate.
So you're okay. I think I know where you're going with this, but I need you to say it.
There are individuals out there that can help people with, you know, sexual techniques and just experiencing sexuality, that do work as a, kind of a training partner, you would say. And that would be known as a sex surrogate. There are, of course, obviously some gray lines in regards to, you know, how that works exactly.
Isn't you know, that just like a really experienced hooker?
Not necessarily. Again, not sure about the legalities in, you know, different countries and provinces, but I do know some folks where it is actually a designated licensed profession in parts of the U.S.
Really?
Where, yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, they work a little bit differently because at least the ones that I know, they have extensive training on human sexuality, and there are definite boundaries that aren't crossed where they coach, they are hands on, hands in.
So you said you know one. We'll be getting that information later.
Absolutely. Yes.
And so they don't teach the starfish as a finishing move?
Starfish.
Because I feel like that's my move.
That's it. Is that the and then the glitter.
That's right. Hillary, it's like having a sparring partner. Imagine you go in the ring with your sparring partner and then the real match is with your significant other. That's
right.
The real boxing. That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does make sense. I mean, you wear all the protective gear and they kind of take it easy on you.
That's right. And I guess there's a lot of talking. That's crazy because, and I'm not going to, okay, well, I'm just going to say it now because now we're talking. I would love to know if I give a proper blowjob. Proper blowjob as opposed to an improv. Like, I think I do, but
British.
I don't really know.
Sounds a little British.
A proper
well,
what?
Proper blowjob.
Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, we've all seen porn. And yeah. I actually, I have a gay friend who actually explained it to me once, mm-hmm. how to give a proper blowjob.
Right.
And I was, and at the time, and this was only a few years ago, I was doing it totally wrong.
Yep.
And I thought to myself, that's probably the greatest gift that you could have given me is to teach because they don't teach that stuff.
Well, and we don't have those organs.
I don't know how to use it exactly.
Well, and what's interesting is, you know, proper for who? Who is on the receiving end,
know.
Right? So if you've watched those types of porn and adult films, you know, do you need to put on an extra layer of mascara? Is that what is that what your current partner wants, right?
Yes.
Or not, right? Or, you know, how much saliva do we need?
But and does it
is
need
it
to go
necessary
on for
that I almost throw up?
Exactly. Do I have to? It doesn't feel right. Does it have to go on for 20 minutes? Because that's not going to happen either.
Oh, I don't think so.
I feel like 3 minutes is fine.
Absolutely.
To five.
That's right.
It.
And then starfish, glitter, we're done.
We're done.
Okay, I want to go back to the communication conversation we had. You brought it up very early on. Let's say one partner is not satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
How do you bring up that conversation with your significant other? How do you go to your partner and say, it's just not doing it for me?
I think that the most gentle way that you could do that is, you know, you could even talk about, you know, I'd like to talk about, you know, our sex life and, you know, what we've been doing. And is there anything that we want to do differently and so on. And then as you're having that conversation, using lots of I messaging versus you never, you know, these are just communication basics and talking about your feelings, you know, I feel, or, you know, I've been watching Outlander and, or I've been watching movies and I've been reading erotica or whatever I've been doing. And, you know, there's some other things that I think that I would like to explore, you know, or, you know, let's say that you have a partner and they're not a great kisser, right? Or anything else. You know, you can say, you know, there's some areas that, you know, I don't know if, you know, we could possibly improve on. You know, I was thinking about this and just gentle conversations versus, you know, I got to tell you, I'd probably want to do it more often if you were any good. Right. Oh. So that's not a good way to start it out.
Wow.
Like, yeah. And that happens. Right. I mean, how often do we end up having, you know, some sort of conflict? You know, someone didn't put a dish in the dishwasher and there's some sort of huge explosion, which then results in, well, you're also no good in bed. Right.
But even still, like, I think ego is so tied up.
Yes.
In sexuality. That mm-hmm. if you go to your partner and you say, hey, I was hoping to change this up, the general reaction is, what? I thought it was pretty good. I'm good. Or what do you mean I don't satisfy you? And then they shut down.
No, absolutely. So, you know, does, even though you may be willing within your partnership and you've been reading a relationship book and, you know, and you're tweaking up your communication techniques, if you're, you know, talking to somebody that doesn't have that skill set, maybe that's something that you need to work on is relationship communication skills. Again, you know, how do you approach that? You know, I think that we could work on this. And as opposed to being more kind of in your face and we need to fix you, you could have that conversation about, you know, us and our intimate relationship and what we're doing together, you know, and are you fully satisfied? And kind of opening things up where you're saying, I'm willing to be vulnerable. I'm asking you if I'm enough and if you're happy. And, you know, hey, by the way, you know, let me show you on this cantaloupe how I would eat it.
Would you?
Okay, Sandra, I have
Hello.
A question for you.
Okay, because, okay, all right, ask away. Oh, boy.
Have you ever had to have a conversation with a partner, and I won't specify your husband?
Mm-hmm. But obviously we're talking about him.
But have you ever had to have that conversation? And do you agree that sometimes no matter how gentle you are, it doesn't go the way you want?
Yeah, absolutely. It's nobody wants to hear that anybody's dissatisfied in the bedroom. That is not good information. And I don't think the confrontational approach is the way. Yes, to answer your question, Hillary. And then, Tracy, I have a question for you, which is, can you do irreparable harm to your relationship if you come at this too hard with your partner?
Irreparable?
Because I'll be honest with you. If my partner told me that he was dissatisfied with my sexual performance, even though I know deep down I'm only a 3, if he told me, I would be probably devastated. And I would probably have that in my head and I would have performance anxiety the entire time we were doing it.
So, you know, I think with anything in life, if someone has, you know, when somebody says something like that to us and we take something like crazy to heart and we feel like less and so on, you know, that's where you may want to look at, wow, you know, do I need to look at some way, whether it be through outside help, I don't know, like a coach or something. to help me process that, right? You know, again, when something is, you know, you're hit really hard, you know, seek outside resources if you have to. But I think the first thing that we can do is recognize that, you know, wow, I was really hurt by that. I think I may have some insecurities. Is it possible that some people never realize that and there can be irreparable damage? Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It depends on the people, depends on the relationship, depends on what people choose to do with the information. You could, you know, individuals could completely shut down and nope, it's not me. It's obviously a problem with you. And then off they go. And, you know, we're all different, but, hopefully we can all be open to, you know, potential changes that we want to make for ourselves so that we can move forward and have our best sexy life.
Oh yeah. Can I ask you one final question?
Maybe.
Have you ever worked with a couple that has been completely incompatible and have had to go their separate ways because it was just not going to happen for them?
I have worked with couples where, because people come to me about the sex, right? So we're not having sex. And as you dig deeper, they both express that they're not even sure if they like the other person. Then the problem is not the sex. And so, you know, those individuals, and I have had a few situations. I don't know if the partners, if they sought relationship help. I don't know if, you know, they ended their relationship, but I do know that we discovered that, you know, the concern was not sexual. The sexual lack of intimacy was merely a symptom of deeper relationship concerns.
So they needed a therapist.
They needed somebody specific to their, that was more specific to the relationship and some deeper aspects of the relationship outside of their sexual interactions with each other.
Yeah, it's hard to want to have sex with someone when you don't really like them. I get
yes,
that. Yeah,
you
for
bet.
Sure.
Yep.
One more question from me. What do you think about couples that use sex as currency? Like, if you do the dishes, I'll do this for you.
Now that, it depends on the nature of the
Sandra,
relationship.
Why are you giggling?
I'm constantly like anytime there's like an award show on TV, I'll be like, let's do an Oscars pool. Winner gets this, winner gets that. And I'm always playing. Every time we make any kind of bet in my house, I always play for sexual favors because mama wants to get done.
And for some people in the relationships, that's okay. And what if you have, like, you know, a dom sub sort of relationship? What if you, like, it really depends on what your relationship dynamic is. Maybe that's your fun. Maybe that's your, you know, bartering for sexual favors and now, you know, just take me, right? That could be part of your play. Is everybody happy within the relationship? Is everybody satisfied within that relationship? Then, you know, whatever you're doing, consenting human adults, then it's cool. Are people bittered? Are people embittered? Are people dissatisfied? Do they loathe the other person? And does that loathing not work for them? Yeah, it really
right.
depends.
I think
really
I depends. Mean like withholding as like, because it's a punishment for something you didn't like or whatever. Because we've all seen in TV and movies, people that do that. It never ends well.
No, it's not going to end well. Because if you are, you know, in what is supposed to be a loving relationship and you're playing games like that with malicious intent. Yeah, for sure. That's not a good way to be. And I think that we would all want more. So really look at what you're doing. But can that sort of thing happen where people get bitter and maybe they felt rejected at one point in time? That can happen as well, where, well, you didn't want it, so now I'm going to play games with it. That's just not a healthy place to be. And I think that we all want better for ourselves, for sure.
What's your website, Tracy?
I am at www.tracypassiondiva.com.
Thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tracy. It was such a blast.
This episode is over, but the conversation doesn't have to be. Follow Hillary and Sandra on social. Instagram at Hillary on Air, at SandraKiss1053. Twitter at Hillary Welch, at SandraKiss1053. And on Facebook at Quick and Dirty Podcast. Got a question? Email Hillary and Sandra, thequickandthedirty@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can download the podcast each week to your mobile device to listen offline. Find The Quick and the Dirty on frequencypodcastnetwork.com, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts.